At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Nige, check it out.
What's up?
Look at what I got in the mail.
Oh, very exciting, but please describe.
It's the official ballot general election, Alameda County on November 3rd.
That is so exciting, and it is a big deal.
Hell yeah, it's a big deal. It's the first time I'm able to vote. I just got off parole.
I love it. And obviously, voting for president is a big ticket item on the ballot. But what else are you excited about?
So out in California, we have Prop 17, which it restores the right to vote upon completion of a prison term.
Mm.
Right now, people on parole can't vote.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm definitely voting yes on Prop 17.
So soon, you're going to fill out and cast your first proper election ballot. How does it feel?
It feels like I'm a citizen, Nige. Mm. I'm finally a citizen. No more taxation without representation.
Nice. So, everybody, if you haven't already, please get out there and vote.
Hell yeah, get to voting. We need it today.
Okay, here's the show.
My name is Layla, and I'm a junior counselor at Project Avery. The following episode of Ear Hustle contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
So, I feel like just a regular.
Hey, Dad, how are you during this pandemic? The last time we spoke, schools had just closed, and I remember you telling me you weren't worried about the coronavirus and that it'd be gone in a couple months. Well, look at us now. I wish you could see how big Manny has gotten. The last time you saw him, he was 8 and missing teeth. Now he's 14 and 5'10", taller than all of us. I wish you could see me, how I've grown throughout the years. I know there's always pictures, but that's just not enough.
Earlon, we've talked about parenting on the show a bunch of times, and it's usually from the perspective of the men who are in prison and trying to figure out how to parent from inside.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard
mm-hmm.
because you only get a few minutes of phone time a week.
Mm-hmm.
Your visits are hella short, and a lot of the times you got to take care of business, you know, like family business, like, you know, adult shit.
Totally.
And one of the things that gets squeezed out is the time that you spend with your kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just like being with them, you know, in the moment and watching them grow.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've heard parents talking about this, but what we've never heard is how the kids themselves feel.
Right.
Like, you know, what is it like for them? What do they wish was different? And what do they feel like they're missing out on? And that's exactly what we're going to talk about on this episode. I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Earlon Woods. And this is Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
A couple months ago, we drove out to the beach to meet a bunch of kids who are part of this program called Project Avery.
Hey guys, what do you think? Is it gonna hold up?
Maybe. It did!
I remember hanging out with the little kids,
it was
kicking back,
yep.
Enjoying the beach. They had that little sandcastle contest.
Rock! Okay,
all right,
whatever.
And go! Go! 20 minutes!
Go. And we got to be the judges.
Yes.
And how do you judge kids?
I know, we had to be talking about that one.
Everyone gather around. All right, we need the judges.
And we tried really hard to get out of picking a winner.
Right. So I have to say that you guys are both winners in different ways.
Wait. But, so we do have to award a winner here. And being that I'm a gentleman, I'll allow ladies to go first.
Most of these kids joined Avery when they were little, like 8 or 9 years old.
There was this one kid, Rodney, he asked me to watch those crabs that he caught.
Chad the crab!
Rodney's new buddy.
I think it's alive.
It's
And those crabs were definitely not moving, but we were trying so hard to keep his hopes up.
Oh no, I see a leg moving. He's playing dead. He's just playing dead.
About once a month, the kids from Avery go out on some kind of wilderness expedition, surfing, kayaking, whitewater rafting.
They also take time to just sit down and talk. A few weeks after the beach trip, we met up with Project Avery on the coast up north of San Francisco. There were about 10 kids sitting in a circle around a fire. For a lot of these kids, there's a real stigma around having incarcerated parents. It's something they don't necessarily feel comfortable talking about in school or with their friends.
But here in the woods, everyone understands what you're going through.
Let's start by going around, introducing yourself. And at that point, let's also do what we sometimes do, where we bring in family members that have passed, family members that we hold in our heart.
My name is Chris, and I'd like to bring my grandpa and my dad into the circle.
My name is Anthony. I'd like to bring my older brother and both of my grandpas into the circle.
My name is Tweety, and I'd like to bring my brother and sister into the circle.
Okay, my name is Nigel, and I'd like to bring our San Quentin colleagues into the circle who can't be here.
And my name is Erlon, and I'd like to bring my nephew Tyler, who passed away while his parents were incarcerated, into the circle.
Please sing with me.
And you know what really struck me?
Hmm.
Those kids were totally focused on one another. I mean, it was shocking. There were no cell phones. And whenever somebody was speaking, they got everyone's full attention. And it wasn't just with their eyes. It was like they were being present with their whole being.
And then one by one, each kid tells their story.
Like Ziri, who we heard at the top. She's 19, has long hair, and had this scrunchie around her wrist that she kept sort of twisting back and forth as she spoke.
When she was 5 years old, both her mom and her dad were arrested.
When it happened, I was asleep. I woke up to my mom running around the room, crying and not knowing what to do. And I was like, what's going on? And I heard this banging on the door. It was the DEA and, the FBI just showing up and raiding our house. They came into our bedroom pointing guns at us. I was sleeping, not knowing what was going on, and my little brother was crying at the time. I was scared. I was crying. I didn't know what to do. And I just remember, waiting for what felt like hours outside the house until, finally, the police officer was like, do you know what this is? And my mom, she said no. And it was obviously they had found my dad's drugs, and he was a drug dealer at the time, and they had found all of his stuff. And they arrested my mom, and they put me and my brother behind in a cop car and took us to a clinic.
Ziri and her little brother Manny spent a few months in foster care and then went to live with their aunt and uncle, who basically raised them.
Her mom got out of prison 7 years later when Ziri was 12.
When I first saw her and she knocked on our door and I opened, I was frozen. I couldn't talk. I just felt her go up to me and just hug me and suffocate me. And that's when I knew it's my mom, that's when I hugged her and let the tears out.
So some of the kids at the fire circle had parents who had been released. Others, their parents were still in prison.
And many of them were really struggling with how to connect with that parent.
So something that's been bothering me is he hasn't called me for more than 5 months, I would say. Yeah, his prison, there's always lockdowns, and that's his excuse for everything. But I have realized that he has called my uncle, and that's been bothering me, a lot.
This is Michelle. She's 17 years old. She was wearing ripped jeans, and she had this sweatshirt on that had some kind of, Bay Area pride
thing. It said, the Bay, we fresh.
That's right.
Like Ziri and the other kids, Michelle had brought a letter that she had written to her dad.
I don't really have much to say to you, but I do want to ask you something. I want to know why you call my uncle and not me. You don't know how upset it makes me. Why do I always cry over you? Do you ever cry over me? Or even about me? It doesn't seem like it anymore. Sorry.
It's okay. We're here.
I don't even really want to go. off my letter. I just feel like now it's just like a, I don't even talk to him, so I don't feel any way. I'm not even sad. I'm just angry. I have so much like anger and frustration and just being confused why I have to put so much more effort into even talking to him when he was the one that left me. I really don't feel like talking to him just because I feel like he doesn't really earn that. And when we do talk, it's the same thing. Like, what are you doing? How's this? How's your family? He still treats me like a little kid. Like, he still doesn't ask me about certain things I would like to be asked, like, by other people. He doesn't, it just seems like he doesn't care.
As soon as Michelle stopped talking, this other young woman, Layla, jumped right in there to hold up her friend.
She held that space with her.
You just, like, put it all out there. Like, I just support that. Like, I fully support it. Like, you started reading the letter and you were like, never mind, let me just say how I feel. And it, like, it looks like you're, like, not relieved, but, like, it looks like you got a lot off your chest. So.
Thank you.
What's the, can I say something? Or
of course.
Is there,
of course.
Michelle, you said something that was really, I had never thought about before, so you really just taught me something. I always assumed when we talked to you all that we wanted to ask you what questions you want to ask your parents, but you said you actually want your dad to ask you questions, and that really struck me as such an important thing. But I just had never thought about, of course you'd want your parents to ask you questions, not just you ask them, so thank you for kind of showing that to me. Appreciate it. Erlon, this was a real aha moment for me.
Absolutely. It was very deep.
So we'd come with this whole list of questions that were basically about the parents, you know, like, what was your last memory of your parent? What does your parents smell like? Do you physically resemble them in any way?
But a lot of these kids, what they wanted was for their parents to be better at asking them questions, try to understand them a little better.
And they had a lot of pain because their parents just didn't seem interested in doing that.
What you climbing on me for?
Hey, put your feet down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what it said if you listen. Put your feet down, put your feet on the ground. You can hear what you said if you listen. Because the sound of the river as it moves across.
When Ziri's mom got out, they moved in together and started to rebuild the relationship. A few years later, her dad was released from prison as well.
But Ziri says her relationship with her dad never really recovered.
Up until you and mom were released, I loved receiving your letters and drawings. I still keep them in a box inside a storage closet. When you first got out of jail and were deported, I was around 12, and back then I didn't really pay much attention to it and was fine with phone calls every week. But then you stopped calling, and I had to be the one to make the calls and get your attention. Why should I have to keep trying to talk to you when it doesn't seem like you're interested? I know I can't force a relationship, but it would be nice if you remembered you have kids, you know. Manny and I will always be waiting for you with open arms whenever you decide you want to be a part of our lives again.
Basically, when you're inside, you get three ways to communicate with your family: letters, visits, phone calls.
And phone calls can be every day or sometime as little as once a month. And when you do get to make a call, it's just 15 minutes before you get cut off.
One of the Avery kids, Layla, her mom was incarcerated when she was 3 years old. And she talked about what it was like to be a kid waiting for those calls.
Like when she wouldn't call when she said she could call, like just how much that impacted me. Or like, say I was somewhere else or doing something and she would call, I would have full-on mental breakdowns just because I knew that, you know, with a parent being in prison, it's not like you can just call them back.
And sometime when she did hear from her mom, Layla found herself not really knowing how to respond.
The, like, stacks and stacks of letters that she wrote me over the years, I recently found them and I was reading through them and I was just like, it's crazy how she used to talk. Like, in every letter she would say, like, please write me back, da-da-da-da. How often did I write her? How often did I call her? Like, I feel like I didn't put enough effort in on my part to, like, communicate with her.
When Layla was 12, her mom finally came home, and Layla and her brother had to make a really hard decision. Did they want to keep living with their grandparents or go move in with their mom in another town?
Layla didn't want to leave her school or her friends, so she chose to stay with her grandparents. And that made her mom so angry that she stopped returning Layla's calls.
I had a set time, like every Saturday I would call her, and I felt like it was more like agonizing just because I knew she saw me calling her phone and like still chose not to answer rather than like she couldn't answer because she was incarcerated. That's where it really like messed me up.
The way Layla described it, she and her mom had to find a new way of relating to each other, different than either of them had hoped for.
I don't want to say it was better when she was locked up, but just like our bond now is more of like a friendship than it is like a mother and daughter relationship, which sometimes bothers me because I'm like, you're acting like me, like you're acting like a child, like grow up. So it's like trying to figure out how to like coexist together when one person hasn't really matured, especially when they go in young. In a way, I feel like my maturity is past her maturity, even though we're very differing in age.
At one point, one of the Avery staff members asked the kids, what advice would you give parents about how to talk to their kids? And Tweety spoke up.
She's like an older sister to a lot of these kids. She's in her 20s, and her father, grandfather, brother, so many men in her family have been incarcerated.
I would recommend to the parent who's incarcerated or was incarcerated to just be genuine. You know, if you care, make it very obvious that you care.
Tweety also has some insight into what those incarcerated parents were going through.
And, you know, them being institutionalized, they've cut that emotional, from my personal experience, that emotional vulnerability out, because you can't be emotionally vulnerable in prison. You have to have that, you know, because you're amongst other inmates and whatever it is, especially with men. Like, I remember my brother used to pluck his eyelashes. Not pluck them, but, like, it looked like he's plucking them to avoid crying in the visiting room. We have to be careful what we ask of these inmates, because if they don't know how to be vulnerable, if they don't know how to be a father, if they don't know these things, it's like we're hurting ourselves. Asking that expectation, and then obviously we're going to be disappointed because we don't realize that they can't even achieve that expectation. I'm at a place now where I feel like, how can I expect something of my father that he wasn't taught?
Oof. This is a hard thing to accept, you know? I mean, I still find myself wanting answers to questions I know will never get answered. And here's this young woman accepting that and understanding that sometimes, for your own sanity, you shouldn't even ask the questions.
And I think that's kind of the point of those letters, Nige.
Yeah. So we mentioned earlier these kids write letters to their parents.
Those letters never get sent, though.
And this is really important. I think people hearing about Avery might assume the purpose of the group is to help these kids fix their relationship with their parents.
But that's not really the goal here.
Nope. The idea is to give kids space to just talk about the painful parts of those relationships. Not try to fix it, just see it for what it is.
Sometimes you just got to accept things and move on.
Letters to my pops, what it means to be a man. That's a question that stuck with me for my whole life.
Caesar is 20. He reminded me of a cross between Snoop Dogg and one of the little cats on Backstreet Boys or NSYNC.
That's a perfect description of him. Caesar's parents were both gang members and in and out of prison when he was growing up.
My mom was 17 when she had me. Doesn't know how to take care of herself and doesn't know how to take care of her infant. My life was crazy. I was raised around gang members. I was raised around a single mother that had nobody supported but me. Well, I'll take care of my little sister, change her diaper, walk her to school, take myself to school, pick her up, drop her off, do my homework. All right, help her make her some food. Oh, what's your dad at? Oh, my dad working. Or he on a vacation, or he gonna pick me up later. And whatever I did receive letters from my dad, it'll be the same thing, same thing. Oh, hey, mijo, how you doing? Oh, how's your mom? Oh, you staying out of trouble? You helping your mom take care of your sisters? Oh, you doing good at school? Oh, I heard you got in a fight. Oh, this, that. But it was never, we never got into deep conversations, you know, like,
What do I want to do when I'm older? Or when you get out, what we going to do? One day I got a call. My auntie, and she's like super serious. She's like, I need to talk to your mom. I have a feeling, my gut feeling. I feel that gut feeling like something happened. And then like I just see my mom's reaction go from like happy, chilling to like straight on like crying, dripping tears. She just says, yo, dad dead. Whatever hopes I did have of meeting him, they're all gone. You know, I'm not saying like, oh, I wanted that father and son relationship, but you know, I wanted to at least have some relationship, you know, call it, or be big bro, little bro, whatever you want to call it, you know. But that night, just everything was, you know, gone. Whatever hope I had was just out the window.
When Caesar finished, there was just this chorus of kids snapping and nodding in encouragement.
Yeah, and it seemed like that kind of energized him, you know?
When I'm having a hard day, man, look in the mirror. Ain't no daddy. I see me. I see the future. You feel me? I just want to say I appreciate everybody for today. I love every one of y'all here. Nothing but love for all of y'all. I hope to hear from y'all too, you know? Yeah.
We love you.
Yeah.
You know, Nige, These kids had so much insight that I never could have had at their age.
Yep.
I mean, they're processing their emotions. I never would have been on that level. Like, just being able to identify what I'm going through and articulate it.
I know. And it was really emotional to watch the process and learn from it.
Real talk.
My name's Anthony. I've been in Project Avery for about 6 years now.
My name's Chris. I've been in Project Avery since I was 10, so 8 years.
Anthony has a San Francisco Giants jacket that he always wears. He was a real ringleader at that sandcastle contest.
He was great. And Chris has short curly hair. He's kind of serious and earnest, but sweet. His dad was locked up before he was born.
Anthony, if you could ask your dad one question and he gives you 100% honesty with that one question, what would you ask him?
I'll probably ask, was it worth missing out all this time with your kids for this one thing you were trying to get when you committed your crime? I mean, I'm assuming what he would say. He'd probably say no, because I doubt any parent would want to miss 12, 13 years of their children's lives for one thing. I would hope he would say no.
What do you think is a... what makes a good dad?
To me, this is the definition that I want to try to fill when I become a father. I want to just be there to provide and support my kids and my significant other. I want to be able to be there for them and be there for their important events, like their first words, their first steps, their first graduation, their first sports game, their first dance recital, whatever. So I feel like just being a good father is just being there for whoever needs you.
For both of them, there was this fear that even if they tried not to, they'd somehow end up like their fathers.
And there'll be times when I'm talking with my mom and I'll do something and she'll say, "You looked exactly like your dad when you did that." It's important to me to break that cycle. Like, if I have kids one day, I don't want to not be in their lives. I want to be in their lives 100%. And I think I just try to avoid it and just try to think positively and try to get through this last bit of stretch before I go on to college. And then before, after that, I get a job and then have a family of my own.
I can't get them out of my head, you know what I mean? Because there's things that my mom sees in, or she doesn't see him in me, but I think she does. Because there's certain things that I do, and she reacts, and I can tell, or like reminds her of the bad times, and you know, it hurts a lot. And I know I'm not my dad, but I mean, I'm not my dad. But I definitely do things just like him. And my mom says things like, you know, he'll shape up when he wants to. But I mean, like, I know he's not going to.
Later on, we were talking to Chris, and I asked him about this. Which of his dad's behaviors he was trying to shake?
It's like sticking true to your word, you know, not, you know, keeping empty promises.
So are you saying that you give false promises? And
yeah, I mean, to my mom, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'll help out around the house, and then I'll, you know, just leave all my responsibilities and forget about them.
This part was really difficult. It was so hard to hear him say these things because I just wanted to, I don't know, reach out and say to him, there's so much about you that's wonderful.
I know.
And, like, dig into that part.
I know. And these kids, again, taking on heavy shit that they shouldn't have to take on.
But then Anthony stepped in.
I remember earlier when you were saying how you feel like you're underachieving. First of all, I think you're achieving a lot. I mean, you're in college right now. That's a lot more than other people can say they're doing. My advice to you, just don't be afraid to show little resemblance. Like, because if you totally just shut out all the parts of your dad that you know, you're going to lose the image of him and how he acts forever. Try to look for the good things your dad did, the good personality traits your dad did, rather than focus on the negative ones that you're seeing coming through to you.
Put your feet on the ground, you can hear what they said if you listen.
So, Earlonne, for me, this entire day was a masterclass in listening. And this kind of listening means showing up fully for another person.
And maybe their parents couldn't do it for them, but they could do it for each other.
Yeah.
Because the sound of the river as it moves across the stones is the same sound as the blood in your body as it moves across your bones.
When we come back, a view from the other side of those letters.
A parent talks about what it's like to try to stay connected with your kids when you're locked up.
Hey, are you listening? Are you listening?
Thought you had one ready, man. Come on.
The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black stories, Black truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now they are the story. Hear a feed from episodes across NPR podcasts that center Black voices. Stories should never be about us without us. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
I'm very open and but this is one subject that's still really stinging, so if I don't let my tears freak you out.
How many years ago were you sentenced?
I've been home 9 years.
This is Michelle Garcia. She got locked up in 2006.
Michelle has 4 children, 2 sons and 2 daughters.
We heard the Avery kids talk about how when their parents were incarcerated, it really changed that relationship with that parent permanently. We wanted to know what it felt like from the other side.
Can you describe the day that you had to leave your family?
Oh, gosh. March 6th, I knew for about a week that I had to turn myself in. My younger ones were, you know, 6 and 8. So how do you explain to them, you know, basically mom had done something wrong and needed to go see a judge. I just didn't know how to explain it to them. And so that was just the best that I could do. I was holding on to this hope I was going to come home, that, you know, it was going to be okay. I had no idea what was going to happen. I never imagined getting a 10-year sentence. I remember the morning very well. Took my kids to school, and I had taken my wedding ring, and his mom had just passed away, and we're Catholic, and so the crucifix was on the table, and I put my ring on the table, and I left, and I met my husband and my brother-in-law at Starbucks across the street from the police station, and I had a chai latte and an old-fashioned donut, and I walked in. If I would have known what was going to happen to me that day on March 6th, I'd probably still be in Mexico, and I'm not lying. I think I would have just ran really, really hard and never came back.
Yeah. Would you have left your family?
Yeah, I think I would, but not in a bad way, just to save them from all of this. It really got ugly. We had no idea what was ahead of us. No idea.
Michelle turned herself in and was taken to jail, where she spent the next year and a half waiting to be sentenced.
When her family came to visit her in jail, Michelle was sitting in a little cubicle separated from her family by a pane of glass.
But her son, who was only 6 at the time, would still try to touch her.
You know how we put our hands up to touch each other? He was pressing so hard against the glass that his fingertips were white, just so desperately to touch me. Not being able to touch your kids when they're like this close to you and they're hurting and, you know, it could be something like 6-year-old stuff. Like, you know, he took my toy, but I can't comfort my kids. And there's nothing worse than just as a mother, knowing that I was actually the root of what their pain was coming from.
After Michelle was sentenced, she was transferred to Central California Women's Facility in Chowchilla.
The prison was 4 hours from her house. Every couple of months, her husband took the kids to go see her.
She was so excited about them coming, and she wanted to look her best. She said that she would press her clothes under the mattress the night before so they didn't have to see her in wrinkly prison garb.
But the visits were always over too fast, and saying goodbye was terrible.
How do you even describe? Their necks turned around, like just staring at you. You know, you're going that way, they're going the opposite direction, but eye contact, and you're both like looking the way that you're not walking. And just standing in line, being ready to be strip searched, crying. And you have to do just bear yourself like that when you had just been nurturing a mom, you know, and like feeling normal. And then bam, just, and there's always that one CO, what the fuck are you crying about? And it's like, you know, I just, hard to say goodbye to my kids. I miss my kids. Well, you should have thought about that shit when you did your crime. That was really demoralizing.
What was Mother's Day like inside?
It's bittersweet. You're so excited that you have your family with you, your kids with you. But then you sit there and they're going to go back to school Monday and they're going to be asked, what'd you do for Mother's Day? And I always wondered what my kids said. I remember my
I was still in county jail. I hadn't been to prison yet. It was probably like the first Mother's Day I was gone, maybe the second, and my son had entered a contest. Why he had the best mom. And I believe he got selected to be either the winner or a finalist. And the teacher called him and asked if I would be able to be there to accept it. When I heard that, I just remember feeling like something you scrape off the bottom of your shoe. And Mother's Day from there out is seriously the day I wish I could just erase off the calendar. It starts 3 weeks before, and it takes me about a month after just to be able to shake it.
Michelle's relationship with her older son had been strained even before she went to prison. But while she was away, it got much worse.
My second child, my son, was very angry. He did not speak with me for 4 years. I thought for sure he'd come around, you know? And he didn't. I pretty much thought I would never see my son again. I'd write him a letter every week, Wednesday nights. Week after week, year after year, with nothing in return. People ask me, what did you write about? I still don't freaking know what I wrote. I just was trying to do the right thing, you know?
Michelle told us how she'd write these 8-page letters to her kids. Just all, I love you, and I miss you, and I'm sorry, and on and on.
Yeah, and she felt like she was saying what she needed to say to them. But E, this actually really reminds me of what we heard from those Avery kids. You know, those long letters that Layla got from her mom that she just couldn't answer.
I think some parents don't communicate enough, and others really just say far too much. And it becomes a burden on the kids.
What that does to the receiving end of the children hearing those letters of mom crying and being sad and the damage that they can cause. It was my therapy writing that letter, but not every letter has to be mailed.
Towards the end of her sentence, Michelle's son got engaged, and his fiancé urged him to go see his mom.
By this point, Michelle was at a fire camp, which is low security. She and her son sat down at a picnic table.
He sat where you were, and I sat where I am, and he let me have it. He let it all out. I fucked up his life. He was angry. It was bullshit. What the fuck were you thinking? It was not sugar-coated. It was pretty black and white. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I blame you. And I took it. And oddly enough, that is the strongest relationship to this day because he did what he had to do to get through it.
In 2011, Michelle was released from prison. She realized she didn't know all of these basic things about her kids, like what they'd like to eat for lunch or what kinds of things they'd done while she was gone.
You know, it can be Thanksgiving, Christmas, and, you know, the niece and nephew or, you know, or sister-in-law, like, yeah, you know, we did that. Like, they know my kids better is what I feel like they're saying. They're probably not even thinking that, but that's what I'm hearing, you know, and there's something in me that don't you dare talk about that. Like, you know, my kids better. But the truth of the matter is they probably did know my kids better than I did.
While Michelle was incarcerated, her older daughter basically became the caretaker for the whole family, and that included things like sending Michelle pictures about what everyone was up to. She also made sure that Michelle had everything she needed in prison, like textbooks for her college classes.
But Michelle's crime put the family in serious debt. They had to sell the house, and it had real consequences for her older daughter.
She was in college in D.C. Eventually, she had to leave because of financial reasons.
And, sorry. So then when I got home, you know, she was there with the pom-poms greeting me, you know, with the rest of them. But shortly after that, I wouldn't say within like 3-6 months, you could see the resentment coming. I remember calling my friends, like, after I would be with her, and I'd be like, why is she so mean? You know, did she know what she said? Finally, somebody just telling me she's hurt. And maybe she doesn't even know she's hurt,
yeah.
You know. And it's still a struggle today, out of all honesty. It's that area that just never completely heals. When it comes to my kids and my family, I really fucked up. And it's not a mistake that you can just go do your time and come back and relive. You're just, it's a mistake that ripple effects.
I mean, Erlan, this is something we don't talk about that much. Usually when we do stories about people getting out, it's just about how exciting it is and how they're getting their life back. But the truth is, for some people, there's just things that have happened that just cannot be repaired.
Yeah, and I don't think a parent probably will ever see that, you know. I don't think a parent will see how important it was for the parent to show up at the kid's day at school or show up at a basketball game, show up. You'll never get that. You'll never understand what the kid was going through. And the kid is still holding on to that.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, for some people, those relationships come back, and for others, it doesn't. And I think, with, you know, this is really about accepting it, accepting where people are.
Y'all too old to be shy. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. One more time, sing it now. Ooh, I believe in the power of kindness. Ooh, I believe in the power of love. Honey bees love sweetness, only to help the world bloom. Bringing love to the flower, from the flower to the fruit, we can learn a thing or two. So give a little, give a little, oh, give a lot, don't stop. A helping hand makes the world go round. There's more than enough. Ooh, I believe in the power.
Our Inside co-host, Rasan New York Thomas, has two sons, Brandon and Nicholas.
Oh, yeah, and I remember he had pictures of them down in the media lab at San Quentin.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like an office outside, you know? You have pictures of your loved ones.
Exactly.
New York's been locked up for over 20 years now, and he obviously deals with a lot of these communication issues that we've been hearing about.
Is there any question you wish you could ask one of your kids right now?
Yeah, I would ask Nicholas, like, why he don't mess with me no more, man? Like, why is he not talking to my whole side of the family? I don't have no clue, man. Just one day to stop talking to my whole side of the family. My brother, my mother, me. I don't know what's going on.
So if one of your kids is listening to this episode, right?
Yeah.
What would you like to say to him?
I would say to Nicholas, I would say feelings ain't facts, man. The fact is we love you. We love you. Call us. Call your grandmother. Call me. Put some money in your phone so I can call you, rather. So let's work this out, man. Feelings and the fact is we love you. And I'm sorry. Like, whatever it is I did, I'm sorry. There's no need to, like, not speak to each other. I mean, we can't work it out and we ain't communicating, so there's too much love here to just throw away.
Ear Hustle would like to thank Ziri, Layla, Maurice,
Chris, Anthony, Cesar,
Gerardo, Michelle, and Eric.
And Janisha, also known as Tweety, for being in this episode.
Thanks, too, to Michelle Garcia for being in the episode.
Thanks to Alex Escalante, Zach Whelan, and Amy DeLeon at Project Avery.
Thanks to Kele Nitoro. He played the music you heard at the Avery Fire Shovel.
Ear Hustle is produced by Nigel Poor, Erlon Woods, Rasani York Thomas, John Yahya Johnson, and Bruce Wallace.
This episode was sound designed and engineered by Antoine Williams, with music by Antoine, David Jossi, and Richie Morris.
Amy Standen edits the show, and Julie Shapiro is the executive producer for Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle would like to thank Acting Warden Ron Broomfield, and as you know, every episode of Ear Hustle has to be approved by this guy here.
This is Lieutenant Sam Robinson, the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I do approve this episode.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm.
And listeners, we wanted to let you know we will be back in 3 weeks instead of our usual two. The week of the election, we just feel like we are all going to be focused on other things. I'm Nigel Poor.
And I'm Earlonne Woods. Go vote.
Hey, now call me when you need a friend. Facebook now. Direct message now. Oh, I got you. MySpace now. That's right. Black Planet, come on. TikTok now. Hey, TikTok me. I'm just kidding.
Nige, Ear Hustle listeners are the best.
They really are. You're always in touch, letting us know what you think about episodes and sharing the love.
Yep, it's really a two-way conversation. A relationship.
Indeed it is. And if you're looking for a way to deepen that relationship, consider signing up for Ear Hustle Plus.
Ear Hustle Plus. It's a new subscription service that delivers bonus Ear Hustle episodes wherever you get your podcasts.
In addition to ad-free episodes of Ear Hustle, subscribers get behind-the-scenes, off-the-cuff conversations.
We have a monthly AMA, which is Ask Me Anything episode, where you and I answer questions sent in by subscribers.
And seriously, no question is too random or wacky.
Questions like, what's our favorite book? Do we hang out in between seasons? What's the most technically challenging Ear Hustle episode ever?
Okay, Earlonne, yeah, those are good questions, but like we said above, I'd like some wackier ones, actually.
We've also started doing episode commentary, where you and I listen to a classic Ear Hustle episode and talk about how it came together, hard decisions made along the way, and where the people in the episodes are now.
Yeah, we did that for Sellies, and it was a lot of fun, so we're definitely going to do more. And Earlonne, tell them about that idea you're working on.
Sure. I've been sitting down with some of my formerly incarcerated friends who have gotten out and are doing well. Just basically showing how they went from one situation to a better situation, if that makes sense. Those will start dropping in the Ear Hustle Plus feed soon.
Listeners, we want you in this conversation. Find out more about Ear Hustle Plus at earhustlesq.com/plus or subscribe right now in the Apple Podcast Player app.
That's earhustlesq.com/plus or right in the Apple Podcast Player.
So, what is your favorite book, Earlonne?
Sorry, Nige. You got to subscribe for that.
Really?
Yes. Radiotopia.